Hey, good morning, everybody. Today's daf is Shabbos daf Samech Hey. We're going to pick up on daf Samech Hey and Aleph at the two dots on the second line of the page. Today's shiur is once again sponsored by Dr. David Landerer in honor of his wife and children. We thank Dr. Landerer very much for this sponsorship. So again, we're picking up Samech Hey and Aleph, two lines from the top of the page, and the Gemara is first going to talk about a woman going out on Shabbos or people going out on Shabbos with cotton stuck in different parts of their body, in their ear or in their shoe, or a woman going out with a moch, with a feminine hygiene product, and going out with that on Shabbos, whether there's any concern that it might fall out, and then the person might carry it, whether a person might take it out in order to show off to other people. The Gemara is going to talk about going out with false teeth, gold teeth, silver teeth, which one is more of a concern and less of a concern going out with on Shabbos. Then the Mishnah is going to discuss on Amud Aleph more items that a woman is allowed to go out with on Shabbos, and the Gemara at the bottom of Amud Aleph is going to tell us about Avuah de Shmuel and three particular hakpados that Avuah de Shmuel had, that Shmuel's father had, and we're going to discuss whether they were all in agreement, whether Shmuel himself was actually in agreement with Avuah de Shmuel, and it's going to discuss going to the mikveh by the ocean, by the shore, and using a river for the mikveh. The Gemara is going to talk about harama for being motzi and egos for a child. That's going to be the last sugya before the Mishnah Amud Beis, is doing a harama in order to carry out an egos or some sort of candy, some sort of a nut that a child might appreciate. So let's begin again. Two lines from the top of the page. Daf Samechei Amud Aleph Ubimoch Sheba Ozna. So the Mishnah had said that a woman is allowed to go out with, we'll call it, a piece of cotton stuck in her ear. So Tani Rami Bar Yecheskel Vuhu Shekasher Ba Ozna, but that's only if it's actually tied onto her ear, because otherwise there's a chashash that it might fall out of her ear, and she might come to carry it, she might come to move it for Amos in a Rishos HaRabin. Ubimokshe B'Sandalon, she's also allowed to go out with a piece of cotton stuck into her shoe, in case she has uncomfortable shoes, so we'll stop, we'll give her some extra cushioning. So Tani Rami Bar Yecheskel Vuhu Shekasher Lo B'Sandala. Again, that's only permissible if it is actually tied into the shoe, otherwise we're afraid it might fall out, and then she'll end up carrying it in a Rishos HaRabim. She's also allowed to go out on Shabbos with the moch that she would stick into her body when she is a nida. So the Gemara says that there may be tanai to this heter as well, just like for the previous two heterim that has to be kachrula. So Savar Rami Bar Chama Lemeimar Vuhu Shekshrula Ben Yirechaseha, that Rami Bar Chama thought that over here also it's not automatic that she's allowed to go out with the moch sheskinol alinidasa, that it's only if it's actually tied between her thighs, otherwise there's a chashash that it might fall out and she's going to come to carry it in Rosh Hashanah. But Rava disagrees. Amar Rava Aval Pisheino Kashula Kiven De Ma'is Lawasi Lusuye. Then no, it doesn't have to be tied on to her thighs. It's disgusting, and therefore she's not going to come to carry it. It's different than the moch sheba ozna v'sheba sandala. They're not considered to be ma'us, as there's a chashash that since they're not ma'us, she may try to pick it up and bring it wherever she's going. But this is disgusting. She would never pick it up. If it falls out, she's going to leave it there. So granted, it might fall out, but it's not something that she would ever come to carry. So the Gemara discusses, what if she can carry it in a way that won't be disgusting? What if carrying this moch was it had some sort of handle that she could carry it by where she wouldn't have to touch anything disgusting? So do we now have to assume that if it's not kshura ben yirei chosel, that if it's not tied on to her between her thighs, that it might fall out and she might come to carry it because it's no longer disgusting? So Rabbi Abba said mutter, that's also going to be mutter, and because even to hold it by a base yad is still considered disgusting, meaning it's still not a pleasant thing to do for a woman to carry around the moch that falls out of her body, so even that is going to be mutter. So it marnami Amr of Nachman Rosh Hashaya Amr of Yochanan Asala base yad mutter, that even if she made a base yad for the moch that she uses for her needles, it's still going to be mutter, because if it does fall out, in the event that it does fall out, she's never going to want to carry such a thing. Once we mention the moch sheba ozen, though, the Gemara tells us a maisa about the moch sheba ozen. Rabbi Yochanan nafak bulebe medrasha. Rabbi Yochanan used to go out, meaning even though we were just talking about the moch sheskina lemenidasa, obviously from the fact that we're talking about a man now, we're going back on the discussion, even though the Gemara doesn't identify specifically which kind of moch it was, but most likely Rabbi Yochanan, when he went to the Beis Medrash, he went out with some sort of moch, probably referring to the moch sheba ozen, because Rashi points out he was an older person, and the tzavas ozen that he had was he had an overabundance of tzava coming out of his ear, so he would stick some cotton in his ear to absorb some of that moisture. So he went that way to the Beis Medrash on Shabbos for chalukan alav chaverav, and his colleagues disagreed with him. They didn't think that that was a good idea, unless it was tied on. As we learned, it has to be tied on in order for it to be mutter. Rabbi Yannai nafak bula karmelis. Rabbi Yannai would go out with the moch sheba ozen, and the Ritva says, and also the moch sheba sandalo in his shoe, out into a karmelis on the daraisa level. Well, is not a Rosh Hasharab, nor is it a Rosh Hasiyachid, so the whole Isser Hotza'a to a Carmelist is only an Isser Midrabanan. So Rabbi Yannai thought, the Chamer not going to be gozer to go out with a moch to a Carmelist if it's not tied on, meaning this whole Chumer that we have, that it better be tied on, lest it come to fall out, and then you're going to come to carry it, that whole thing's only gezer the Chumer, not gozer, in a situation of a Carmelist. But V'chalukan alav Kaldoro, all the Chacham of his generation, disagreed. They said, they thought that a Carmelis is considered like a Rosh Hasharab on a Drabanan level, and therefore whatever gezeros you have that not to carry to Rosh Hasharab, that might lead you to carry, as far as Rosh Hasharab is concerned, you have those same gezeros that might lead you to carry as far as a Carmelis is concerned. Isn't this a gezero legzera? Meaning it seems that Rabbi Yannai is correct. The Kol Doro, the Chacham of his generation, would seem to be incorrect, because you have a gezero legzera. The fact that you can't carry to a Carmelis is itself only a gzera, and the fact that you can't go out with a moch, she'in a kshura, is also only a gzera, because it's a gzera that it might fall out, and you might come to carry it. So the Ritva writes, kula chad gzeri, that it's all considered a single gzera, that the entire thing is considered a one gzera. Why is the entire thing considered a single gzera? So it could be that the idea of gzera le gzera, Rav Shachter writes in Eretz, the idea of gzera le gzera that we don't make is when the second gzera comes specifically to address the first gzera. That because we're afraid that people might violate the first gzera, we make a second gzera. But then there's a concept called trei drabanan. They have two dinim drabanan that happen to overlap in certain circumstances, but they exist independent of each other as well. Meaning you could have one without the other. Certainly the isra of going out with a moch that is not kshura, that's not tied on, exists independent of going to a Carmelis. That would apply when you're going in a Rosh Hasharabim. The Isser of carrying in a Carmelis exists independent of any Isser of going out with a Moch Sheba Azna or a Moch Sheba Sandala, because it exists just carrying normal things out into a Carmelis. It happens to be that there is a case of overlap. If you're going out with a Moch into a Carmelis, so then it's an overlap. But that's not called a Gzera L'Gzera. That's called a Trei D'Rabbanan, that two Dinim D'Rabbanan happen to overlap in certain cases. So the whole idea of gzera l'gzera is that the chacham were authorized to make a siyag l'Torah, and it could be that they were not authorized to make a siyag l'siyag. You have to think about it. Every single time the rabbanan make a din rabbanan, why isn't it a violation of bal tosif? You're not allowed to just add to the Torah as much as you want. So it required a special heter, asu siyag l'Torah, that authorized the chachamim to make siyag l'Torah. But it's only they're only authorized under certain conditions, under certain circumstances. So you can't make a gzera on top of that gzera. They're not authorized to do that. By doing that, they're going beyond what they're allowed to do, possibly. But when each gzera on its own is only a siyag, and there just happens to be overlap between the two, so that would be a trei drabanan and not a gzera le gzera. So ask the Gemara, v'atani rabbi bar yecheskel v'hu shekasha lo ba'ozna. How could Rabbi Yochanan go out with this moch sheba'ozna when it wasn't tied on? Didn't Rabbi Yecheskel tell us us in a brisa that it needs to be tied on. So granted, Rabbi Yochanan is allowed to argue on Amoraim, but over here you have a brisa that Rabbi Bar Yecheskel taught, and he wouldn't argue on a brisa. And not only that, the Achronim point out that even from Rabbi Yochanan himself, you see that when it's not kashur, it would be when it's not tied on, it would be asur, because Rabbi Yochanan said that a mokshe skina lindasa vaslo beis yad, that if you make a handle on the moch that a woman prepares for her needles, then it's mutter to go out with it because it's considered ma'us, and you're not going to come to carry it. So it sounds like a moch sheba'ozen, which is not ma'us, is going to be usser when it's not tied on. So it turns out Rabbi Yochanan is even soser himself. So that's an additional kasha the Gemara doesn't even raise. The Gemara just asks Rabbi Yochanan is against a braisa, and how could he argue on a braisa? Even though Rabbi Yochanan was a ben doro of Rav, and we do have a few times in Shas that Rav Tanuhu Upalig, we don't really have by the other B'nai Dor of Rav, that other members of Rav's generation are a Tana and are Palig, that they too have a status of a Tana and can disagree. The impression you get, because the Mishnah writes in Hilchos Mamrim, is that there was no Isser really for Amoraim to argue on Tanaim. It's that they chose not to, that they thought that their time would be better spent trying to figure out what the Tanaim have to say rather than arguing on the Tanaim. Rav was not willing to make that acceptance in all cases. He was not willing to accept that upon himself, not to argue on Tanaim. But it could be that Rabbi Yochanan and Shmuel and Levi, others were willing to accept that they should not be arguing on Tanaim. Anyway, so it may be a steer within Rabbi Yochanan himself, but that's not what the Gemara asks. The Achronim deal with that. But the Gemara is asking that how could Rabbi Yochanan be against the Braisa? So says Gemara, lo kasha. No, the fact that Rabbi Yochanan went with a moch shabaozen, ha demi hadik. Rabbi Yochanan went out with it when it was really stuck in there really well, where it was unlikely to fall out. Ha demi hadik. And the Braisa that says that it's got to be tied on is something that if it doesn't fit very snugly into the ear, if it doesn't fit tightly into the ear, then there's a legitimate chashash that it might... That it might fall out. So that's the difference. And then we said that a woman could go out in the mission we said with a pilpel and a galgal melech. So pilpel, what function does it serve? L'reach hapeh. It's something that takes away bad breath. And galgal melech l'dor shinai. It's a cluster of salt helps for some sort of tooth ailment that she might have. Somehow eases whatever pain a person has on their teeth. The only other thing I could think of where we have salt, that a person has like a cluster of salt in their mouth, is there's a halacha in Yoredeya, in Hilchos Avelos, that if you have a dine goses, that if you have a goses, you're not allowed to do anything to be memaher misasa. So for example, you're not even allowed to touch a goses. But the Rama writes that you're allowed to be meser the melach from his tongue, that if a goses, if there's something that's keeping him alive and not allowing him to just die in peace, you're allowed to remove that which is keeping him alive. So the Rama gives two examples. The Rama says, example number one, there's like a he doesn't say these exactly, but there's a jackhammer going on right outside the window of the hospital, and the noise and the lachat is keeping him alive. So you're allowed to tell them to stop jackhammering and let him peacefully go into the Olam HaEmes. And the other one, the Rama says that you're allowed to remove a cluster of salt from his tongue, because apparently that's just hasara samoneya. That just keeps him alive. It's just taking away something that's keeping him alive, as opposed to doing something to be makarivis misaso. So to touch a goses might be murder, but to remove the melech. So over here it seems that it's something different. Over here the melech is to treat some sort of ailment. It's I don't know if that's what it was. I don't think anyone's sure exactly what the Rama was talking about, what the practice was of putting the salt on the tongue in terms of keeping a person alive. Okay, we call davar shenosenus l'toch piha, and she can go out with anything that she puts inside of her mouth. So what else does she put inside of her mouth? Says nagvila, ginger, inami dartsuna, or cinnamon, meaning she might put other types of spices in her mouth that are the ancient version of Listerine strips, something that will just freshen her breath, that will make it that she doesn't have a smelly breath. Shein to teves, shein shel zahav, Rebbe matir v'cham mosrin. If she has a false tooth or a gold tooth, Rebbe allows a woman to go out with that on Shabbos, and the chamim say that it's aser. So I'm Rebbe Zeira, lo shanu el Kabbalah Shel Zahav. When we say that the Chachamim hold it's Aser, that's only a gold tooth is Aser, because Zahav is very expensive, so she might be bragging about it. She might yank out her gold tooth and show all of her friends, and then she'll come to carry it for Amos in the Rosh HaSarabim. Aval B'Shel Kesef, Divrei HaKol Mutter. But a silver tooth is not so Chashuv, so it's Mutter for her to go out with, because it's she's not going to take it out in order to show that off to her friends. That's what Rashi writes, but then Rashi quotes B'Shem Rabosav, another explanation, that the reason that she's not allowed to go out with a Shein Shel Zahav is because it looks different than other teeth. Gold does not at all look like the color of teeth, so there's a chashash that people are going to mock her, they're going to laugh at her, and then she's going to want to take it out to avoid their mockery, and she's going to carry it for Amos and Shoshan. But a Shein Shel Kesef is going to be Mutter because it looks much more like the rest of the teeth. Rashi asks on the Perush of Rabosav that the Gemara is going to say soon that Abaye says that Rebbe and Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar all hold that anything that's misganabo, she would not show to her friends. So if the reason of the Chum is that the Chashash is that she might take it out because it's different than the rest of her teeth, and that they'll laugh at her, so why do we consider only Rebbe, who says that something that she's misganabo, she's not going to show off? The Chum also agree with that. It's not only the Shita of Rebbe. So therefore, Rashi says he prefers the other Pshat, that with the gold, it's not an issue of miskana, adaraba, it's an issue that she's going to be very proud of it, because it's a very expensive piece to have gold in her teeth. So Tani Nami Achim of Rabbeisa says just like this, that Bishal Kesef Divra Kol Mutter, that there is no machlokas about a silver tooth, that everyone's going to say it's Mutter for her to go out with. She's not going to remove that from her mouth. Shel Zahav, but if it's a gold tooth, Rebbe Mati V'Cham Mosrin, then Rebbe's going to say it's Mutter, the Cham are going to say that it's Aser. So Rebbe allows going out even with a gold tooth, and we're not choshesh that she might come and show it off to a friend, because it's at the end of the day, no matter how fancy the fake tooth is, it's a fake tooth. It means that she's toothless. So she's not going to want to show that off. That's going to be something that's considered to be a little ma'us. So Rabbi, Rebbe, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, these three Tanaim, Rebbe, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, all hold that something that is going to be gnayed to her, something that's not going to reflect nicely on her, it's going to make her feel gross, she's not going to want to show that off to her friends. Where do we find that all these three Tanaim hold this? Rebbe Hadamaran, Rebbe, what we just said in the Mishnah and the Braisa, that he allows going out with a gold tooth and he's not afraid that you might come to take it out to show it off to anybody else. Rabbi Eliezer, where do we find Rabbi Eliezer holds such a shita? D'tanya, Rabbi Eliezer poter bikoveles. Rabbi Eliezer holds that a woman who goes out with a knot of golden strands or silver strands is potter, because they would put something in it in order that if she has bad body odor, they would put fragrant spices in it to mask her bad body odor. So she's not going to want to show that off to anybody, because it's a reflection of the fact that she has this bad body odor to begin with. And Tzolch Shel Palyaton, right? And he also allows going out with Tzolch Shel Palyaton, parsimon oil, which also is something that would mask bad body odors, so she would never want to show that off. That's what we learned a couple of days ago on Daf Samach Beis. And the third Tana, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, Ditanya, where do we find Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar holds that a woman would never want to show off something that's a gnai to her? Klalam, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, kol shu lemata min asvacha yotzebo, lemala min asvacha eino yotzebo. That a woman, any tachshit that a woman places underneath the cap that's on her hair, like a woolen cap, she's allowed to go out with, and you have to worry that she might show it off to her friends, because since it's on her hair, if she removes it, it may be megala her hair, and that will be embarrassing for her. But I think that's the malam in asvacha, so if she removes it, it's not going to be megala her hair, it's not going to expose her uncovered hair, so then she would not go out with such a thing, because we're afraid that she might take it off, and she might carry such a thing in a Rosh HaSarabin. The Rashba raises the question that something that she's miskanabo, everyone agrees she wouldn't want to show it off to a friend. That's why she's allowed to go out with all of these items. We spoke about the biris that holds her thighs, the leg bands, because she's miskanabo. A kippah shel tzemer, you don't have that. The issue is not miskanabo. The issue is Tzniyus. It seems to be an entirely different issue. So why do we say that this third shita, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, is the same as the first two? The first two is that she's in a situation where it's like embarrassing. I don't, if she doesn't have a tooth, she has a bad body odor, that's embarrassing. By showing it off, she's showing off that she's in this embarrassing situation. This one, this last one, what's her embarrassing situation? That she has hair? That she's it's not an embarrassing situation, it's an issue of tzniyus. So he says that that all of these relate to a mum. Shalzav is a shein totavas that you put b'makom that she's missing a tooth, a kavalas and sochus shal palyaton because recha ra, and kippa shal tzemer is also she would only wear it if she's bald. So he says it's something that women would only wear, says the Rashba, if she doesn't have any hair, and therefore it's misgana because that's why it's mentioned together with peya nachris. So everyone agrees that she'd be that would also be considered something that's misgana, and that's why it's put together. So it's not only a tznius issue the way the other Rishonim explained, the way Rashi explains that going out with this is also for whatever reason only bald women would wear this, and therefore it's something that she would not want to show off to anybody else. It was like an extra layer underneath her regular hair covering, which covered her scalp. Okay, new Mishnah now. Says the Mishnah, other items that a woman is allowed to go out with on Shabbos. Yotza b'sela sha'ala tzinis. She can go out with a coin on a tzinis. The Gemara is going to have to explain what exactly a tzinis is and why a coin is helpful for a tzinis. Habanos ketanos yotzos b'chutin. The young girls can go out with strings that are in the that are in their pierced ears, because right after a woman pierces her ear, she can't allow the whole. She got to keep something in there, otherwise the hole will close up. So they would have these strings that they would keep in the ears in order to make sure that the holes don't close up. Vafilu b'kismin shabaz name, or they would put splinters in the ear, which is not a tachshit that's particularly beautiful, but they're allowed to go out with it because that's the way the young girls used to go out, and therefore it's not considered a masui. Arvios yotzos ruulos, the women from Arabia would go out when they are ruulos, when their full head was wrapped and you couldn't see any part of their face except for their eyes, with like a burqa, meaning if that was the custom in their community, that's how women walked out, so Jewish women in that town would also walk out like that. They would also be wearing such coverings. Umadios prufos, and women from Madai would go out on Shabbos when they're wrapped with some sort of beged around their neck, where they had a strap on one end of it and on the other end of it they had a stone or an egos, and they would tie the strap around to the other side in order to that it shouldn't fall off, so it was sort of wrapped around their neck. The kol adam, and really all women are allowed to go out with these things, Ela Shadub Kham Bahova. But the Kham were just telling you what was common to wear in Madai and what was common to wear for the Arvios, for the Arvios to wear. So that's why it spoke about those specific women. But really, for anybody, these are just types of, these have a din of clothing. Porefes Ala Evan v'ala Egos v'ala Matbeya. A woman could attach a beged with a strap to a stone or to an egos, to a nut or to a coin, and she can go out with that on Shabbos. Ubavach lo tifrof lechadchila b'Shabbos, but she can't place those items on that scarf lechadchila on Shabbos. The Gemara is going to ask that we just said parefes, so it sounds like you're allowed to do it, and then we say ubavach lo tifrof, so it sounds like you're not allowed to do it. So which is it? Are you allowed to put on this garment or not allowed to put on this garment? So we'll see that discussion, Brother Shema, on Amud Beis very, very soon. So says Gemara, first things first. The Mishnah had said that a woman could put a coin on a tzinis. My tzinis, what in the world is a tzinis? Bas aras. So it is some sort of wound that's on the bottom of the woman's foot, and somehow putting a coin there is helpful to make it heal. Umayshna sella, why is a coin as opposed to anything else, a silver coin, is going to make it heal? So the Gemara says a couple of possibilities. Ilei mekol midi da'akushim malilam. Maybe you can say any hard item will protect the wound from any thorns or thistles that might get into the wound that she might be stepping on, she might be walking on, and therefore it's protective. So it's like putting a splint, it's putting something hard underneath her foot that's going to protect it. Well, then, love of the chaspa, why would you waste a coin on that? Just take a shard of pottery that's also hard, and that will do the same thing. It will do the same trick without having to risk something so expensive. Ella mishum shum. shuchsa. So now maybe the reason they would use a coin is because silver produces a certain type of moisture, and that moisture is good for the refuah. It's good for the healing process. So they have a latasa. So why does she need a coin on the makkah? Just take a flat piece of silver. What do you need a coin that has a matbea, that has a tzura on it? Elamishum tzurta. No, it must be that the actual tzura on the coin is good for the wound. For whatever reason, that helps it. That helps it heal. That having a particular tzura on it is going to provide the right shape that's going to allow the wound to heal. So says my love of the pulsa. So make a tzura on a piece of wood, and which should do the same thing, and put that on the wound. Why would you have to put a piece of silver, which is much more expensive? Must be that all three of these factors go into what makes a sela particularly helpful for this type of wound, and therefore the only item that has all three of these qualities, that's hard and that produces the kind of moisture that silver produces, and that has a tzura, is a coin itself, and that's why we recommend using a coin. And it's got to be a large coin like a sela. That's what the Rishonim point out. So it has to be that's the only thing that's going to work. Okay. The Achronim raised the question. Okay, so that's why they would use the coin. Do you need an item that has all three of these qualities in order to be matter to go out with it? I mean, let's say you don't have a sela coin available, but we see that each of these characteristics have some sort of therapeutic value. So in the Sefer Shabbos Shalmi, he raises the question: do you need all three of these characteristics, or let's say you have an item that has only one of these milos? You have a flat piece of silver. When it's two of these milos, like a flat piece of silver, it produces the moisture that silver produces, and it's hard. Is that also enough? And the Mishnah just picks the best example of what to use. So it's not clear from the Gemara one way or the other as far as that's concerned, because the Gemara could just be identifying what the most effective item to use is. Habanos yotzos b'chutin, and then we said that the girls, young girls, can go out with these strings in their ears. So Avud Shmuel, there's a big question why it is that women are allowed to pierce their ears in the first place, right? Generally speaking, a person is not allowed to be chovel themselves. But you find all the way back from the Dor HaMidbar that there were nose rings and earrings, and that was always mutter. So traditionally, certainly, it's mutter. It's just a good kasha. Why? Meaning, for decorative purposes, a person is allowed to be chovel in themselves. They're allowed to make a wound in themselves. But you know, they say the Maisa that when Rav Aaron Lichtenstein's daughter wanted to get her ears pierced, they didn't do it when she was a little girl, and she was already 14 years old, and she wanted to get her ears pierced, and Rav Aaron didn't like it. He didn't like the idea of it. He was opposed to it. So she said, "Let's ask a Shaila." You know, when your father's Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, it's not so easy to say let's ask a Shaila. But he had a Rebbe too, so he said, "Okay, we'll go to Rav Shlomo Zalman. We'll ask the Shaila." So Rav Aaron used to describe that he went in with his daughter to Rav Shlomo Zalman, and he said, Rav Shlomo Zalman, his face lit up, and he said to my daughter, he gave her such a warm greeting. Hello, how are you? So he said, that's when I knew I was in trouble, when he greeted her before he greeted me, and I knew I was in trouble already. And then what can I do for you? And she asked the question, and Rav Shlomo Zalman looks at Rav Aaron, he puts his hand on his shoulder, and he says, sometimes we have to learn to let go a little bit. And that was it. That was the psak. This is an old tradition that we have, that women get their ears pierced. So that's okay. So Abanos Yotzos Bechutin. So Avod Shmuel Lo Shavuk Lubinte Dinafki Bechutin. He did not allow his daughters to go out with these strands, with these strings in their ears. And the three things that Avod Shmuel had akpadus about. That was one. Velo Shavuk Luhu Ganyan Gabe Adadi. And he also didn't allow them to sleep together while they were young girls, to sleep together in the same bed. Velo asaluhu va'avidluhu rather, mikvaos biyome nisan, umaftsi biyome tishrei. And the third thing that he was makbid about, he used to make for them mikvaos of gathered rainwater to be tovel during Chodesh Nisan, meaning he would not allow them to go to the river to be tovel during Chodesh Nisan. He would make mats during Tishrei, because then they would be tovel in the river during Tishrei. He held that that was okay. So in order that, the way Rashi understands, in order that the mud from the river floor shouldn't get on their legs and between their toes and be created a problem of chatzitza in the tevila, so he'd put a mat down so that they wouldn't their feet wouldn't get muddy and it wouldn't be a problem of chatzitza. Pasuk says Barachatz b'mayim es kol besaro, and the Chazal darshan in Maseches Erevin and elsewhere Maseches Sukkah shlo yedavar chotzeitz beino levein besaro. Right, whenever we say shiur chatzitzin u'mechitzin alech l'moshe misinai, so the Gemara asks the kasha, what do you mean chatzitzin or alech l'moshe misinai? It's a drasha from a pasuk that Barachatz b'mayim is kol besaro, that you can't have a chatzitza. So you can't have these items that are a chatzitza between the body and the water, and that's why he was nervous about that, so he would make these mats for them to step on. That is how Rashi understands. Tosos quotes a different explanation from Rabbeinu Tam, because a number of the Rishonim ask on Rashi that they made a gezeira not to be tovel on top of kelim that are miyuchad the yeshiva, because we were afraid that that they would come to be tovel in a kli that she would bathe in a washing basin or something like that. And so how could you be tovel al gabe mafatzim on top of mats? That's a kli that's miyuchad the yeshiva. That would be a violation of that gezeira. So for that and other reasons, Tosos suggests in the name of Rabbeinu Tam a different explanation of what these maftzi are about, what these mats are about. That when they would go, these weren't mats that they were placed on the floor of the river. No, these were mats that created a mechitza so that people wouldn't see them when they're tovel. And the Ramban quotes the same from the Gaonin. What was the purpose of why was it so important that they have these mats? So that for tznius reasons, why can't they just go at a time where they think it's kind of safe and people aren't going to be watching? Because if a woman is nervous that people are watching, the concern is she may be too tense and try to rush it and not do a proper tevila. So she has to be confident in the tznius of the location so that she can go and feel comfortable and not worry about the people might see, and they're not going to be and then it won't be a proper tevila. That's why one of the reasons, both of these reasons are two of the reasons why in general, to the extent possible, we discourage using the ocean as a mikveh because of these concerns. Both the concern that there may be chatzitzas that end up between your toes that we're not so happy about, and the concern that people will see. The Shulchan Aruch said that a woman shouldn't be toveles in any place. Shulchan Aruch writes in Kuf Tzadik Ches Sif Lamed Daled, a woman shouldn't be toveles in any place that people might see, where there's even a cheshash that people might see. It says that it's a valid tevila b'dieved, but we strongly discourage that. I just had a shayla over Pesach. A woman from one city in Florida was staying in another city in Florida for Pesach, and the local mikveh had a rule because of the coronavirus that no one from outside of their city is allowed to use the mikveh. So she wanted to know whether she can go to the ocean or does she have to drive all the way back home to the city that she comes from. It would have been an hour and a half drive or something, or 2 hours of a drive. She wanted to know, does she have to drive back home or can she just go to the ocean in the city that she was in? So a rabbi asked me, I wasn't asked directly from the woman, a rabbi asked me the shaila. I said, I don't think it's a good idea to go by the ocean for these reasons. It's a lack of tznius, and she's going to be nervous, and the tevila is not going to be good. And, you know, there are lots of, you know, the husband's never been a mikveh lady before. He doesn't know the job of a mikveh lady and what exactly he's supposed to do. It's not, I didn't think it was a great idea. But in the meantime, they had asked another Rav, Big Tamil Chacham, actually, who said that it is a good idea that she should do that she should go to the ocean. I got a call back a few days later that she tried it, and she cut her foot on like a shard of glass at the ocean. They ended up in the emergency room that night. So instead of having a proper tevila, it's just too much can go wrong if it's not a situation that's set up for tevila. So it's not advisable. But Avud Shmuel Dafka would try to make sure that there were these mats, according to Rabbeinu Tam, that provided a sense of tznius during the time of the year where they were using the river for tevila. So let's go through each of these hakpados of Avuah d'Shmuel. Only the first one really relates to our Masechta and our Sugya about a woman going out with something stuck in her ear. So lo shovel glu yotzos b'chutin, he wouldn't allow them to go out with these chutin in their ears. Va'anan t'nan abanos yotzos b'chutin. Why is Avuah d'Shmuel makbid about this? The Mishnah said they're allowed to. So binsei d'Avuah d'Shmuel d'tzavonin havu. The daughters of Avuah d'Shmuel had colorful strands, and therefore he was afraid, since they were so nice and fancy, that they might come to take them out to show them off to their friends, and then they'll come to carry it in Rosh Hashanah. When the Mishnah spoke talk about going out with these chutin in the ears. That was talking about something that was very plain, and therefore they would not come to show their friends. And the Achronim ask, you know, about the mikveh thing. Why for his daughters? I would think for his wife that he would do something. Not for the Rishonim already asked this question. Why for his daughters? So they said it must be. The Rishonim explained. The Ravan writes that it must be based on their location, that they were the ones that lived near a river and they didn't have a Chabad shliach in the middle of nowhere or something, and they hadn't built a mikveh yet, but his wife lived in a community that had proper mikvahs, so he didn't have to worry about something like this. Okay, so second thing, lo shavaklu ganyan gabe adadi, he didn't allow the young girls to sleep in the same bed with each other. So they say, hey, they have the Rav Huna. It must be that Avua de Shmuel holds like Rav Huna. Dam Rav Huna, nashima misololos zubazu, that if women are rubbing against each other in a way that reflects taivas tashmish, then psulos lekuhuna, they're going to be pasul lekuhuna, they're not going to be allowed to marry a kohen gadol, because it's not considered a full basulim. She's not considered a full basula. Now, halacha is that while a kohen is allowed to marry a woman who's not a basula, a kohen is just not allowed to marry a grusha, but a kohen is allowed to marry someone who's not a basula, as long as she's not a zona or a grusha. But a kohen gadol has a din that he dafka has to marry a besula. So in the days of Avua de Shmuel, they didn't have a kohen gadol anymore because it was way after the zman of the Chorban. But he thought that the fact that would pasul her lekohen gadol is a reflection of the idea that this must not be a nice thing to do, that this is like a little bit of a derech znus to do something like this, and therefore he wouldn't allow it. So even though obviously there were no kohanim gadolim at that time, but nevertheless he thought that obviously if you're saying that this would passel her, it must be something that's not nice. So do you see that Avua de Shmuel is aligned with Rav Huna about that, about the psul to the kohen gadol? Says Gemara, lo, you can't bring any raya from Avua de Shmuel from Avua de Shmuel's hakpada about his daughters to what the din is by a kohen gadol. Savor kiyechi de lalil from gufa nuchra'a, he stam doesn't want them to get accustomed to being feeling the warmth of another body with them, because then they're going to have a taiva to be with a man. So it's not about the being with the woman that's inherently a derech znus, that's inherently problematic. He was just concerned that it's going to lead to something that's problematic. And then the final hakpada that he had, vavalu mikvah b'yomei nisan, he made a mikvah of gathered rainwater in yomei nisan. He didn't allow them to tovel in the river. Why wouldn't he allow them to tovel in the river during Nisan? Misayele the Rav, it's a raya to Rav. Dam Rav, matra b'marava, when it rains in Eretz Yisrael, which is to the west of Babel, that's why it's called Marava, Sada Rabba Pras, the great testimony to the rain that's happening in Eretz Yisrael, is the Pras River, because you'll see that it starts overflowing from the rain that's happening in Eretz Yisrael. So when the B'nai Babel see that the Nahar Pras has raging waters, they know that it must have rained a lot in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore they should know to rejoice. Before the days of modern communication, they can know to rejoice in the abundance of rain, the bracha that Eretz Yisrael was receiving. The Tosos raises the kasha that Bavel is to the east of Eretz Yisrael. That's why Eretz Yisrael is always called Ma'arava in Talmud Bavli, and the normal flow of rivers is to go from east to west. So Nahar Pras went from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael and not the opposite. So that's why they quote the Rabbeinu Tam, that when it would rain in Eretz Yisrael, the river would start flowing strongly the other way because of the rain. And when they saw, when the Bnei Bavel saw that rained in Eretz Yisrael, it would stop flowing as strongly the other way because it was already full in Eretz Yisrael, so it stopped flowing with such a gush out of Bavel, and that's what they would know. Okay, however it was that they would know, there were some indications by looking at Nahar Pras. So Avud Shmuel held like Rav that it's the the May Paras benefits from the rain. So there's a lot of rainwater in it. So Savar Shami Yirbu Anot Finala Zochlin. So during the days of Nisan, where there was so much water after a whole rainy season, he was afraid that maybe there was too much Megishamim, more Megishamim than the natural flow of the spring water, and it's going to take away, and the Megishamim is going to overpower and be Mevatel, the natural main Nahar. Now, Megishamim can be Metar a person, but only if it's still. Megishamim that flows, if you have rainwater that flows, then it's not going to be able to be Metar a person. So that's why he didn't allow his daughters to be Tovel during Nisan, because he was afraid that there was too much rainwater. So he instead made for them Mikvaos. But you should know, even though this is what Avua de Shmuel did, Opliga de Shmuel. Avua de Shmuel is actually against Shmuel himself, meaning Damar Shmuel, Nahara Mikifei Mivrach. Shmuel holds that a river from its own sources overflows, meaning its abundance comes from its own sources and not from Megishamim. So even if it had a lot of water, you don't have to worry that that's coming, that's a majority of rainwater, and rainwater doesn't have the capacity to be Metair. Upliga Didei Adidei. And Shmuel himself seems to be arguing on himself. Damar Shmuel, Eina Mayim Metairim Bezochlin, Ela Paras Ubiyam Etishim Bilvad. Shmuel himself said that the river water is only going to be Metair, whether it be a person or whether it be Kalim, if it's flowing, and only Paras Biyom Etishrei, because that's when you don't have so much rain water in it, and the flowing river waters are all you're being tovel in. So you see that river that is Niskadel from Megishamim, against what Shmuel originally said. So that's so even Shmuel ultimately conforms to Avuah de Shmuel. Then the Mishnah had said Parafes ala Evan, that a woman can attach her beged with a strap onto a stone or onto an egos or onto a matbeya, and she go out like that on Shabbos, as long as she doesn't do that lechadchila on Shabbos. So it says, why are you talking out of two sides of your mouth? You first say Parafes, that she's allowed to do this, she can attach her beged in this way, and then you say not to do that lechadchila on Shabbos. Which is it? The Seif is talking about where the item that she uses to tie her beged with is a matbeya, a coin. That's muktzah. She's not allowed to be metaltalid, even if she had designated it from Erev Shabbos for that use. But a stone or an egos, which was designated for that purpose, she's allowed to be metaltalid. It's no longer going to be muktzah. And that's what the Mishnah is saying, that parefes ala evin vala egos, even the lechadchila on Shabbos. But if it was Paraf ala Matbeya from Erev Shabbos and it was already attached that way with the Matbeya, she can go out like that, but she's not allowed to do that lichadchila on Shabbos. So by Abayi, Isha Mao Shetarim V'Tifrov ala Egos Lotzi L'Bna Katan B'Shabbos. So this is not called, if she wraps her beged and uses the Egos to hold her beged shut, that's not called that she's carrying outside on Shabbos. What if her son is hungry and he wants a snack, and she figures, a great way to carry out a snack is I'll use the Egos as a way to hold this garment closed, this scarf closed. So Tibay Lamandiyamar Ma'arimin, Tibay Lamandiyamar Ein Ma'arimin. This is a shayla, whether you hold that when there's a fire in a building, we're going to have sugis about this, when there's a fire in a building and you want to get things out of there, but it's Shabbos and you can't carry to a chatzar sheinu mu'arevas, can you just put on many, many layers of clothing and that way get all of the clothing out of the building? So it's a shaila whether you hold that such a harama is mutter, or whether you hold such a harama to be matzim l'pnei adleika is aser. Why? It seems like the very same issue. It's an issue of harama. So tibay l'man d'yam r'marim, even if you hold that you're allowed to do harama to be matzim l'pnei adleika, maybe b'dleika hasam hudi lo sharisle asil l'chbuyei. Maybe over there we have to allow a harama, because if we don't allow it, then you're just going to come to extinguish the fire, which is going to be nisud d'oraisa. So we'd rather allow you to put on layers and layers of clothing to save the items from the fire. Aval hacha, but over here by a woman who wants to wrap around the egos in order to carry the egos, ilo sharisle lo asil l'chbuyei. If you don't allow it, she's not going to come to just carry it b'adayim. She's not going to just come to carry it in the normal way. The kid will have to come in the house if he wants to eat something. Or maybe you could even go the other way, that if you hold you don't do harama, by a dleka. You're not allowed to put on the layers of clothing to save clothing from fire, but still, maybe that's only asr over there, is because hasam derech hotzah bekach, because that's considered derech hotzah, meaning when people would sell clothing, that's the way they would sell clothing. They would put on layers and layers of clothing. So that's considered a typical type of hotzah. Aval hacha ein derech hotzah bekach, but over here it's not a derech hotzah. That's not a way you would carry an egos under normal circumstances. Say a shapir dummy, maybe this would be mutter. So teku, the Gemara leaves this unresolved. So the Rush writes, what do you do with the teku? So since the whole issue is an issue on a derabbanan level, it is certainly not an issa daraisa. It's about doing a harama. The whole issue is on a derabbanan level. So a teku derabbanan, you can go lekula. We could be mekel. However, Rishonim quote that there are those that are machmir. The truth is, it's a bigger discussion. In general, whenever the Gemara is a teku, there's a machlokas Rishonim. Most Rishonim assume that we follow the basic rules of Safek, Safek Drabana Lakula, Safek Daraisa Lachumra, but other Rishonim understand that no, that Teku means that we have to go Lachumra. Teku means that the question has to remain unresolved, and an unresolved question, you would go Lachumra because you'd want to play it safe when a question is Dafka unresolved. So Teku, that's what the word itself, Teku, actually means, that it must stand, that it must remain this way. In fifth grade, we were taught by our Aschalas Kamar Rebbe, and it seems that this way from Rishon, the teku means tishvi yitaretz, kushios v'yibayos. So that's there is tradition for that as well, that's what teku is merames to in a certain sense, but it's all because of the word means let it stand. Let it stand until when? For a long, long time, until Eliyahu Navi comes and he's able to be mevarer many of our sveikos. Okay, Be'ez Hashem, tomorrow we'll pick up at the Mishnah on the bottom of Samachem and Beis. Everyone should have a wonderful day. Sure.